Hello, welcome back to Full Time with Meg Linehan. You are listening to a show all about women's soccer on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Meg, your host, and I'm a national staff writer at the Athletic, covering the NWSL and the U.S. Women's National Team. It is Pride Month, and the NWSL is apparently celebrating that by having the undefeated Orlando Pride at the top of the table. Plus, we've got the summer series with the U.S. Women's National Team starting next week down in Texas. Now, on today's show, we've got double the full-time women's soccer reporters as Steph Young joins the show on her second day here at The Athletic. But honestly, we're just doing our usual thing, talking soccer and answering some of your questions. And speaking of Steph, this is why I always tell you how important your support of this work, this podcast, and our women's soccer coverage is. I'm so thrilled that I do not have to keep the secret anymore, because also I was just honestly not the best at keeping it, but because it's because our women's soccer coverage has been such a success that we are able to keep building and keep growing. And it doesn't have to end here either. So as always, if you're enjoying the podcast and you want to read our women's soccer coverage and everything else The Athletic has to offer, visit theathletic.com/fulltime and start your new subscription. Just a few quick items for this week's news. On Wednesday, Houston announced Maria Sanchez will be joining the team on a short-term loan for the month of June. Sanchez will be available for 3 matches this month after just winning the Liga MX Femenil Championship with Tigres. And Dash have been busy this week across the board. They also picked up forward Jasmine Spencer via a trade with OL Reign, sending a 2022 third-round draft pick to the Pacific Northwest. Finally, all eyes were on the Lyon versus PSG match in France that was expected to act as the title decider for the league, and thanks to that 0-0 draw, PSG have inched one step closer to upending Lyon's dominant streak of 14 league titles in a row. The games on Friday, this upcoming Friday, will decide the winner, but PSG is facing a team that they are absolutely expected to beat. And when it comes to Lyon, with their participation in this summer's WICC tournament out in Portland, that means I checked in with them as part of The Fixture. That's the digital show that I also host every week. So keep an eye out for videos with Katerina Macario and head coach Sonia Bonpastor dropping soon, and I will definitely be retweeting them. Okay, so Steph Young is back now, as a full-time women's soccer writer here at The Athletic, and not just as someone I would pester to do this show with me and hang out on Zoom for an hour. But again, I cannot overstate how excited I am to have her on board, since we were already working a bit together since she's been freelancing here longer than I've actually been around. But also, you know, we're friends. So we took some of your questions this week and we attempted to answer them. Here we go. Okay, so let's start, because now, as I said on Twitter, you can't escape me. You now work with me. So you're doomed to this existence forever.
I mean, I almost wanted to be like, I'm not trapped in here with you. You're trapped in here with me.
That's going to be the vibe, I think.
Yeah.
The Athletic women's soccer coverage to come. What was your day like yesterday? Your first official day?
It was like 1 million forms. It's like sign up for all these things that the company uses internally for, you know, like, reimbursements and travel and like some spreadsheet thing, and this is how you're gonna get paid. I was like, that's important. Sign up for healthcare.
That is important. Yeah. Yeah.
You know. So it wasn't terrible though. I was like, oh, this is great. I love healthcare. Click.
I will be opting into that. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So I asked folks on Twitter for some topics and questions, but I think before we get to them, I did just kind of want to go over some general reactions since we got national team roster. NWSL is NWSLing, and the Orlando Pride are at the top of the table, which is certainly a thing that everyone expected when this regular season started, right?
Yep. Yep.
So it's we're recording on Wednesday, June 2nd. What is the one thing that you are thinking about the most when it comes to NWSL US Women's National Team right now?
I don't know. I mean, I'm definitely thinking about Orlando Pride undefeated. Top of the table. Alex Morgan looks good. Sid LaRue is really, you know, looks like she's in her groove. The team looks like they're having fun out there. They're at Marta's house constantly doing vegan barbecue.
They really are.
Just eating hot chip and floating in the pool. Like, what a life, you know? I was also thinking about Rose Lavelle playing for the Reign, coming in looking okay, looking pretty good, doing a lot of Lavellian things, looking robust. I think there's a misperception of Rose because she's small, that she's fragile.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair, she did have a long injury, and, you know, she was injured a lot at Wisco as well, but it seems like she's started to get on board. It's that thing where when the college players jump to the pro game, they're like, oh, I can't just eat cheeseburgers whenever I want because I'm not 19 anymore.
Yeah.
Right? I can't run for 90 minutes. It's also not NCAA rules, blah, blah, blah. So I think Rose has taken some of that stuff to heart. She's made that jump with, like, nutrition, recovery, and training. And start watching for this. She is a lot more physical and robust in the tackle now as well over the past year or so. A couple of years, I guess, because we didn't have soccer in 2020. Yeah. But, like, if you watch, that's, she's added that dimension to her game. So she's not as fragile as you think. So I think this could be, like, another great year for Rose Lavelle.
I mean, I personally am just very ready to watch the Reign turn into whatever version of this team is going to be as they add some of these other players. Like, I just, I'm going to be very in, like, it's yeah. one of those teams where you think, like, okay, you put it all on paper and, like, sure, great. But, like, that has happened before in this league, and then it doesn't always necessarily translate. But that's not to say it might not happen here. Like, yeah. the Reign have certainly been fun in some games, right? But I am very interested to see what happens as players come in, also as some players leave. You know, like,
right.
there's just, I find it to be a very interesting premise, but also, like, they have so many players coming in for just this loan period. How do you balance trying to take advantage of that right now with what's coming down the road with double expansion, again, in theory, for 2022?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe Farid is in win now mode. Like, he's new to the league. It seems like he's been struggling. Whether he believes he's struggling or not is a different story. But maybe he's focusing on, like, well, I'm going to have Amaro and Lavelle midfield at some point. That's going to be sicko mode. So,
yeah.
You know, try not to think about 2022. Focus on wins now.
Yeah. I don't know. It's going to be, again, I just, like, it's one of those ones where I feel like a lot of us had very easy predictions after the Challenge Cup, and then all of that has gone immediately heavily out the window as soon as the regular season started, because the table does not look like what we would right. necessarily. And granted, it's still, you know, it's just now June. So
yeah, this is something I've been talking about with some friends of mine, which is some of these teams are due for a regression to the mean. One of them that we've been looking at is Gotham, where Gotham really should have a lot more goals against than they should.
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad they don't, but, like, in terms of probability, statistically right now, they feel a little like, ooh, what's happening there? It really is. If I had to quantify luck, right, that's how I would quantify it. And so you're wondering, like, ooh, when is the normalization game going to happen where they make up for all the...
where it's suddenly like a 6-0 game. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Like, or just a couple games in a row, they give up 2 or 3.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, and Kalen Sheridan being back for this team is obviously, like, a huge factor in yeah. the fact that they have escaped. I mean, just some of the goals that should have been goals again. I mean, it is honestly mind-boggling, I think, to watch that team and just be like, there are so many, like, huge chances that don't actually turn into goals. And some of it is Kalen Sheridan or, you know, like, kind of this last-ditch tackle or whatever. But mm-hmm. so much of it is just, like, ungodly luck. Like, there's just no other.
Yeah, I was talking about this in multiple groups, and Sophie Lawson, who covers a lot of international games, was watching a game, and we were like, it really seems like Gotham's luck has turned, because it was some scramble in front of the box. It might have been end of Challenge Cup or beginning of the season, and Sophie pointed out, like, 2019 or 2018 Sky Blue, that ball definitely bounces off the back of a player's back and goes in for an yeah. own goal.
Yeah, it's just also, like, a terrible goal, right?
Yeah.
Like, all right. So let's get to some questions. We can start, we've already talked about them a little bit, but there's a good question of, on a scale of 1 to 10, how great is Orlando? 11, 12, 14.4? And, I mean, you just talked about a regression a little bit, too. And, like, I do kind of think that Orlando will probably come back down to earth at some point. But, you know, Mark Skinner and all these, the post-game press conferences over the past week, as the wins started to stack up, right? Like, it is really interesting because also, like, you think about what where we were kind of last week and we were going through the, like, Paul Riley versus Orlando Pride. Like, they wanted to be artists and now they don't play any football whatsoever. But now we're also at the end of May, start of June, where Orlando Pride is undefeated, top of the table, and have kind of unlocked how to win games in this league.
Yeah.
Would you put them at a 11 out of 10?
I mean, if the scale is supposed to be like their own expected performance, absolutely. If you're not measuring them relative to any other team, on the scale of what their own performance was expected to be, absolutely 11 out of 10. They're doing great. I hope it continues. I love chaos.
I also just think, like, the thing that I can't get over with Orlando too is it is just so good for the league if Orlando is good. Like, in terms of overall narrative, but also just, like, from a health of the end of, like, again, we want to talk about parity and all this kind of, like, sure, yes, but also it is a good thing if teams that are stacked with major players are actually good. It does not hurt, I'll put it that way.
Yeah. So. I sincerely hope also it jives. So FIFA released a report on women's soccer, where they kind of studied the trends and they noted some correlations. For example, teams that have higher average pay tend to do better. Stuff like that. And I'm just wondering if Orlando having good facilities, good team culture, and, like, good pay is helpful in, as you mentioned, like, as for the rest of the league to see, like, this is what you can achieve when you set the right conditions. So even if you're bottom of the table, any team can improve. Any team can get better. Any team can win in this league. You don't have to just languish at the bottom no matter what.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we've seen that turnaround for teams before in the past, right? Like, there have been very quick turnarounds of, like, this team was underperforming one year and the next year they're suddenly fighting for a playoff spot, right? So.
I mean, season one, Reign.
Yeah.
They were the big losers. The turning point was against the Boston Breakers when they finally won after, like, 15 losses, 16 losses in a row. I knew
going
to that
game. And it was in
game,
Boston, too.
Yeah, it was a home game, and I knew in my gut, like, oh, this is going to be the one. Like, this is the team that everyone's like, this is the easy dub. So for us, that's when their Laura Harvey, like, figured it out. And then for the next year, 2 years, it was just like they were the boogeyman.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. All right. I want to start us off with another question from our friend Courtney Stith, who had a few questions, but this was the one that I think, when we saw it, caused the most immediate stress of pressure. And is honestly, I think, arguably one of the best questions that the two of us could get, which is, if you had 5 chickens like Crystal Dunn, what would you name them? And before we started recording, Steph literally sent me a photo of her little piece of paper with, like, chickens underlined. As I had also, on a post-it note, started thinking about what I would name some chickens. Also, the entire time I've been going through this process, all I can think of is the vine of, look at all these chickens. Which, if I ever have chickens in my yard, A, that is immediately being recreated, but B, it would be literally every single day, which is because my wife doesn't know any Vine references whatsoever.
That is true of my partner as well. She's like, is that a meme? I'm like, sometimes I can get away with it and be like, no, it's the thing that I invented. I'm just very clever.
Yeah. Marjorie will usually look at me and be like, I know that that's clearly something that you did not come up with, but I don't want to know what it is. All right. Do we want to reveal our chicken names?
Do you want to go first? Just name 5.
Okay. All of, like, I did a theme of TV characters, right? And I first was going to go all girls cuz that is kind of an unofficial rule of this household, but then I was like, I would really want a chicken named David so that way I could do the Schitt's Creek ew David whenever I felt like it. So David was on my list. I have been rewatching The Nanny, so Fran is on mine. Agatha, for Agatha Harkness.
Mm-hmm.
Root, for Person of Interest. And then my big name, as we just finished our Buffy rewatch, was Faith.
Yeah. I can do an okay Fran Fine impression.
I think we have to say, like, I personally am not mentally prepared for that to happen. So
no,
we need to
it's
hold
extremely
on to
short. I can't do it, like, she's just going, I'll miss that Sheffield. It's not
we'll
great.
Say, The Nanny has held up as yeah. I've been rewatching it.
But like, you just have to get that kind of nasal, I'll miss that Sheffield. It actually sounds a little too much like Lois Griffin from Family Guy. So maybe it's not as good as I thought.
We can workshop it.
Okay, thanks.
All right, give me your chicken names.
All right. I want to add the caveat here that naming things is so subjective to personality. You can't just willy-nilly name animals ahead of time.
That
but
is
since
true.
That's what we've been asked to do here at Candidates. Sinclair. I'm so sorry, Christine Sinclair, but... Maybe if it like it was one of the chickens that's clearly like the leader of all the chickens.
Yeah.
You know? Yep. Scully. I think Scully is a great name for a chicken, especially if it's like a red hen. Lieutenant Trouble, which is a Captain Marvel reference. I've always thought it's funny to give chickens elaborate names like they were landed gentry or something. So like the Baroness, something like that, or like the Duchess, her Royal Highness of you know, Somerville. It has to, the fanciest names are always like Stowe on Kent. So I guess yes. It would be like Somerville on the Charles.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Or there's this series that I like called the Locked Tomb Trilogy, and they have a character in it called the Necrolord Prime. And I think that that's a very dark and good name for a chicken. Because birds are...
They're dinosaurs.
They're dinosaurs. They're small dinosaurs. They have... plans that we can't fathom, you know.
Yeah.
And then naming a chicken Stop Asking for the Schedule.
What is that chicken's nickname?
Stop.
Okay.
Or Stop Asking. This is Stop Asking. And then I think it's funny that I also had Faith on my talk about formative influences. Like, clearly we came from like the same pool and generation of like,
thank you, Eliza Dushku, for that awakening.
Right. Like, what are these feelings?
Yeah. I will say season 7 of Buffy is for when Faith finally shows up. And I'm just oh, you got your shit together. Like,
right. She's at peace with herself. She went to therapy.
she went to prison. So
she said she had a therapist in prison.
That's true. All right. Here is a question from another person that we both know, and one that I'm sure you will be delighted to get. It is from Andre, and it goes, hi, first time, long time. My question is for Steph. Can she talk a little bit about being such a great writer and better person? And I know what is great is that because this is coming from Andre, who also hates talking about himself, like that is the meanest possible thing he could do to you. Or, I mean, really, what's great is, I think, in our little group, we all hate talking about ourselves, but we like talking about other people. For those of you listening to this podcast, please know Steph is literally currently trying to hide under her desk on this Zoom. So it's great. That is a great question from Andre that got a great response. So I'm sure we can move on. Thank you.
I know that was deliberate. I know that was deliberate, Andre. And I won't forget this.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
How about instead we could relive the first time we actually met in person, which was when you scared the shit out of me in a parking lot in Philadelphia before US Women's National Team game.
Did I physically jump on you or yeah, did you I did. Just like, okay.
Okay. Like I was walking in the parking lot and you came up from behind me and all of a sudden there was Steph.
Yeah. That does fit with kind of like my personality. I mean, when in person was this 2014, 2013?
No, it was 12.
2012. So yeah. I was actually thinking about that a couple days ago and I was like, have we known each other for almost 10 years?
Yeah.
Before meeting in person in 12, we like talked on Twitter a little bit.
Yeah.
I wonder if I could find my first tweet like at you.
We can go on a journey down the Twitter archives.
Wow.
Yeah.
10 years. Yeah. And we didn't end up hating each other.
I know, and now we work together, so.
Oof.
Yeah. It's all happening. It's all happening. All right. Let's go in a soccer direction. This is a big, big question that I think a lot of people have been discussing, honestly, this season. But how can the NWSL remedy the refereeing situation? Because first of all, we've already gotten like a decent number of fines around this year. But also, like, I mean, I was even talking about this with someone, you know, having been at the Gotham home opener, right, when Midge Purse gets kind of the collision with Jane Campbell, like, I was a pool reporter for that game. I sent in questions to be like, what, what exactly was that? And can you talk through your reasoning? And then I fully expected it to go past the disciplinary committee. Apparently it didn't. Like, I don't think we've gotten a disciplinary committee email since the regular season started. I don't think.
Like an NWSL release about?
Yeah.
I guess yeah. Not.
Yeah.
Announcements have just been showing up on the site.
Yeah. So Rory Dames obviously speaking this last weekend about the quality of the refereeing, feeling like it has taken a real step backward, right? Again, we're probably going to get an email about him being fined because that is the policy. Mm-hmm. I mean, my real question is, like, is there a remedy beyond spending money? And I don't know if there is.
He has a point. He had a point when he was saying that PRO only cares about MLS. I don't know how true that is internally, but that's certainly the feeling that I think people have, which if PRO wants to get mad about that, then they need to address, like, well, why do people have this perception? And it's because of the quality of the referees in NWSL. And you can talk all you want about allocating more resources for training women. But I think there's a couple of problems here. One is they need to start seeing NWSL as a comparable entity and not just a stepping stone, like a league where you go because you're not good enough for MLS. Like, I think we need to start seeing refs who get MLS games also refereeing in NWSL, maybe. I don't know how logistically possible that is, and I wonder if the pay also differs.
I would assume.
Across would the leagues.
Yeah.
Which goes to your money point. But they're... the money might be the only way to incentivize them to care about NWSL. Otherwise, how do you incentivize them? Because they're like, if they lose NWSL as a client, why should they care?
Yeah. Also, just like, is there even an, like, if NWSL decides to go somewhere else, like, what is even the other option?
Right.
Because I don't even know what that other option would be.
Does PRO effectively kind of have a little monopoly on referees for tier one games in the United States?
Yeah. I mean, again, like, I have never had any sort of desire to have that sort of role. Like, I think it is wildly thankless. It is also extremely public, right? You have, like, it's just, it feels like a completely thankless thing across the board.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that refereeing has been one of those constant drumbeats of this league over the years, right? And I think that it had kind of improved, and now we are seeing that kind of step backward. But at this point, I think it now has also become an issue of player safety on the field, just in terms of, like, are players actually feeling safe? Like, are the games fully under control? Because I think we have seen a couple of times this year where the games have not felt under control for the full 90 minutes, that something could potentially happen or there could be an injury. And obviously, like, 2021 is an important year for a lot of players too. And, you know, we have seen already a couple of injuries, and, you know, Juilliard's was not necessarily like a thing that stemmed out of the referee losing control of a game, but like, you just don't want that to happen.
Yeah. NWSL has a reputation as being a league where you can F around and find out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For a reason. There's a constant cry within the fan base, and I think the players know it too, where you can just be like, oh, she's not going to call that. Fouls called in this league? That doesn't happen. So I think the players also know, like, you can kind of try and push the boundary and just see if it works or not. And if you get a little warning, like, oh, okay, I might pull back. They also don't hand out cards in this league, so maybe I'll commit 2-3 more fouls to keep pushing that boundary. And if she never says anything or he never says anything, then that's not my fault.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there is kind of the specific, like, especially after that first yellow card happens, like, you kind of know that there's like a free pass coming on the next one almost.
Yeah.
Like, unless it is truly, truly questionable. Like, if it is just kind of a foul with a little extra, like, you know that that's not going to get that second yellow earned. You're going to get like another warning, basically. So, yeah, I don't. It is really interesting just because, like, I don't know if there is some sort of easy answer right at the moment, but fundamentally, I think a lot of this stuff usually does come down to money, and it feels like one of those sorts of things. So
it's the thing where, like, Piero doesn't care if fans complain. They don't rely on fans. They rely on leagues, because that's who's paying them to staff their games. They don't sell tickets. They don't sell merchandise.
Yeah. I'm trying to now think of pro selling, like a pro hoodie. Just people being like, no. There was a follow-up on this, is like, what is up with the NWSL changing who scored that Orlando Pride goal? Is that normal? And I will say, when I got the email from the league last night when they announced that the goal scoring had been changed from Marta to Alex Morgan, just seeing the subject line, I was like, are they taking away that goal? Because it's not even changing the goal score, it's the fact that there's still a lot of uncertainty of if that ball actually crossed the line fully. And now we're like, someone had sent me, there's fan footage from basically like slightly off the angle of the corner flag, and I'm sitting there like on my phone trying to zoom in, and I'm just like, so I'm watching this like the Zapruder film, okay, like, but also it's on a slight angle, so I was like, I get the argument that it didn't fully cross the line, but that video is also not a definitive look by any stretch of the imagination. Like, it's not goal line tech. We're not working with, you know? So, but for, like, that isn't normal as far as I'm aware. I can't remember another time that we've gotten an email days later after a game.
I mean, I think there have been adjustments in the past to be like, this was changed to an own goal.
Yeah,
like,
I think own goal is typically the one where, because I think in game people are a little more willing to be like, that person scored, and then later on whoever does the stats is like, no.
I will say, this combined with all of the early disciplinary committee changes and fines, it feels a little bit like, whose line is it anyway, where like the rules don't matter, the points are made up. This season more than any other, it feels a little bit like, retroactively, we can just go back and make this whatever we want. So don't worry about it. We'll fix it in post.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, but that, even taking that in a slightly different direction, like what is happening with the Olivia Moultrie case too? Like the fact that the judge sets this, just, okay, quick recap of where we're at now, is the judge set, gave a temporary restraining order in favor of Olivia Moultrie and said, okay, you are now free to be signed. And then the league emails all the teams to be like, actually, we don't have a mechanism to sign her. We're going to have to come up with something else. We'll get back to you when we get back to you. And that, to me, like, the big question for me heading into this was, okay, does the league get this TRO, look at it, and go, we need to stand down, essentially, and figure out how we address this, slash, actually just focus on getting the collective bargaining agreement done with the PA, which is going to solve every single one of these problems.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, they are doubling down. And that, to me, is, again, kind of
right.
What are we doing?
I have a lot of thoughts on the Moultrie case, like, at the micro and the macro level. Like, a lot. From disagreeing with the way, with some of their legal strategies on the NWSL side, but also actually on the Moultrie side as well. And when I say Moultrie, I don't mean Olivia, because she's a child. And this is, you know, a case of, like, I want to be, like, the people responsible for this are probably her agent and her parents. So, like, I'm not ascribing, legal strategy to a teen.
Yeah. Yeah, she's not handling that.
No. Yeah. Olivia is reading a brief and, like, highlighting it, being yeah. like, actually, according to case law in this, blah, 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 or, like, this is the you know. I mean, I certainly hope she has agency in this matter. I certainly hope this isn't a case of, like, an overzealous agent or an overly interested father or something being like, you know what? My daughter's going to play pro soccer, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's all speculation. But I definitely have a lot of thoughts about, as it relates to the league and kind of talking about how this is kind of an additional part of the whole, does the league know what they're doing right now kind of vibe?
Yeah.
We're both making, like, really uncertain emoji faces. You know, the one that's just showing all its teeth?
Yeah. It is just so I listened to a chunk of the hearing that actually happened in person. And the one part of it that is going to stick with me a while was this argument from the league of, look at all the women we have running this. We can't be sexist.
Right.
And I was just like, do you really want to say that right now?
Right. That's one of the arguments where I was like, you know, that's not a great argument that just because a woman does it, that means it can't be sexist or misogynist.
Yeah.
Or, like, just because a woman does it, it's inherently progressive. Like, you guys don't really believe that, do you? But they might. There is, like, this streak of, like, lean in.
Girl boss.
Very, like, capitalist, white feminist. That kind of runs through a lot of the women who tend to work in, or, like, a lot of the white women, particularly, who tend to work not just in women's soccer, but in women's sports overall. That's very, like, yeah, go girl, crash that glass ceiling, make that money, secure the bag, and doing all that, like, is inherently progressive.
Yeah, and it's not to say, like, sponsorships are important, right? Because that's how women's sports survive, but also you need to ensure that the actual soccer slash rules slash play, like, that part is also just it, you don't have the sponsorships if you don't have the other part. Like, these two things have to happen at the same time and have to have the same level of dedication. Like, you can get all the sponsorships you want, but if the product is starting to suffer because you're spending all your time getting sponsorships, like, that's where my kind of overall concern is right at the moment, because we're seeing it with the refs, the Moultrie stuff, like, player safety issues, both physical and emotional and mental, right? Like, there's a lot of stuff happening, and part of that can be resolved via a CBA, but part of it is also just kind of like, this is still a soccer league. Like, what are we talking about, the soccer, when we're talking about the league itself? Or are we talking about, okay, we've got a new sponsor coming in, and what can we give that sponsor? And, like, you need the soccer in order to make that happen, and the soccer has to be developed.
Right.
Like, the soccer has to be a focus too.
Some of this has felt fundamentally like the league feeling like they got caught flat-footed, because the rules in this league have always had a feeling of, like, first of all, are there rules? and they'd have them, you know, they have rules published on the site, but, like, you know, we didn't get official rule book until, I think, after the season started. There was, like, changes made to the rules, and they sent them to media, I want to feel, say, like, a week or two into the regular season. And so there is a sense of, like, the league always playing catch up, like having to fall behind. And in this case, they kind of got exposed on not having a plan for this particular strategy, which, you know, realistically, they probably should have seen coming as the trend with more and more players skipping college to enter the league. And then you had Trinity Rodman as well, who's a young player. So, and then Olivia Moultrie isn't even the first sub 18-year-old because it was, what, Ellie Carpenter? Yep. Who made a deal with the Thorns at 17 and then had to wait until she was 18 to play. So it's not like they're unaware that this is going to be a possibility, especially since she was 13 when they first announced that they were going to like move to Portland and train with the Thorns.
Yeah.
So it's like at that point, you were on notice that this is something that you might have to prepare for. And then they got caught pretty flat-footed on it. And I think that this legal defense feels like them scrambling to just kind of get a potpourri of reasons and hope that the judge really likes one of them. That's the feeling.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the three arguments were this should be the CBA, even though previously it wasn't the CBA, right? It was just an NWSL rule. But suddenly, all of a sudden, they want the CBA. The second was we can't be sexist because we're women. And then the third was, well, it's going to cost money and it might affect the owners wanting to spend money on other things. And it's just like, none of those feel like great ones to me.
Don't forget that ultra mean argument from outside counsel where they were like, her teammates on the Thorns actually don't like her and don't think she can play. And I was like, how is that a relevant argument to any of your points, first of all? Yeah. And second of all, what a mean thing to say. And honestly, it felt like in U.S. soccer, when their outside counsel brought in that stupid argument about women shouldn't get paid as much because
they can't play with the boys or whatever.
Right, they can't play as well. Yeah. And it, like, that knocked over a domino that led to Carlos Cordero resigning.
Yeah, that's a very fair point.
I get the same vibe.
Yeah, it is. I don't know. It's just a very interesting situation. And I think that the way that I've been trying to frame that is there's the legal element. And then there is the discussion of, like, you know, I think Olivia Moultrie herself has been very clear of, like, I'm not asking to be in the starting 11. I'm not asking. Like, I want to earn a contract and then get my chance to actually earn my way from there.
Right.
Like, she's asking for the contract, not for any sort of guaranteed playing time, because I think she knows she's not going to walk onto that field day one. Like, that is not the level that she's at. But
I don't think she's even asking for
her development.
Yeah, I don't think she's even asking for the contract either. She's asking for the opportunity to be offered a contract.
Yes. Yes.
And if Portland or any other team doesn't think she's good enough, and as they argued in their brief, then she simply will not be on a team.
Yep.
And I was like, that's pretty fair.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is really interesting because I think with the equal pay thing and also this lawsuit, like when you boil it down to the simplest kind of argument, right, it gets pretty clear. And the equal pay stuff really is obviously way more nuanced in any number of ways, right? But I mean, the judge really did kind of respond to if she was trying to play in MLS, she'd be playing right now. If she were a French kid and trying to play in France, she'd be, you know, again, maybe not playing, but she would have the opportunity to get signed to a contract. And I think that when you do really just kind of peel back all of these layers, and I truly, anytime a judge is in court trying to ask a soccer league to explain their roster rules when they do not have soccer knowledge is guaranteed to be some level of comedy. But just even her reaction to this NWSL pushback of like saying, no, actually, we need to come up with a new rule, which is also not governed by a CBA and is going to essentially be, I would assume, an antitrust violation of its own. Again, a whole nother topic, but did not go over well, I don't think. So, you know, again, we're on kind of Olivia Moultrie watch 2.0 at this point, basically, to see what happens next. But yes,
even if she doesn't make it, they're setting a precedent here that is putting the league on notice. Like, you guys need to stop being so reactionary in general and be a lot more proactive and kind of mapping out the next 3 to 5 years for this league. And I think that's kind of the ultimate takeaway.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We've got a big long one, which was my new city is supposed to get a pro women's team in 2022. They've started holding open forums. I don't have the benefit of being a longtime women's soccer fan, and I don't know what kinds of suggestions I could bring to the table, but I really want to be a part of it. I haven't made soccer friends yet, and I'd be anxious to show up to a forum by myself unless I had something worthwhile to contribute beyond please don't gender the cut of your kits, which, P.S., good one. I know this sounds silly, and there's probably plenty of obvious suggestions I'm not thinking of, but what are a couple of things I could bring up that are often overlooked when building a women's team? I thought this was a really good and interesting question.
Yeah, I think this person might be making a mistake that I initially made actually in the journalist space, which was I felt like if I was in a press conference or I got to ask a question of a player or a coach or whatever, I felt like I had to ask some kind of interesting, thought-provoking, like meaningful question. Whereas sometimes you just ask the question you want to ask or you don't ask at all. Sometimes you just show up, make your face known, let them know that you're there and you're serious. So I would say don't put pressure on yourself to come up with like some amazing question that causes them to interrogate like the paradigms around which they structure, you know, their understanding of women, femininity, gender, athletics, yeah, and our bodies. Like, you don't need to do that. Go in there, ask the question about the jerseys. That's a legitimate complaint that you have as a fan. Ask the question that resonates with you and impacts you. And I think that's what will stick with the club. And then just keep showing up. Consistency is often what will get a club's notice, not just showing up at one time with, you know, angry little badger face like I do and being like, mind-blowing galaxy brain question, you know? Don't put that pressure on yourself.
Yeah. No, I think just showing up is a really, I mean, I feel like that's both how both of us honestly got our start, is just by like being places on a regular basis. And people just being like, oh, you're still here, right? Like, also, like, what are your like, I think about Neil Morris had that big interview when Heather O'Reilly retired, and he had like posted this whole quote that got cut where she was like, yeah, I just remember like showing up in Boston and like Meg was just always there, and I was like, who is this kid and what does she want and like what is she doing, right? But then she was like, no, I realized that like she just actually gave a shit and was here to do her thing, and like, you know,
right.
that was its own thing. And yeah, so I just think like a showing up and like being present and stuff is going to pop up to you, but also just, you know, you don't have to come in with a list of demands either. I think
You can also tell them what you think they're doing right.
Yeah.
You don't have to tell them what they're doing wrong. So show up in a non-creepy way consistently, right? Respect. I think what players and teams also do respect is if you have a good sense of boundaries. If it doesn't seem like you're just trying to be like peering into the locker room, like, hey, what's going on in there? You got any hagasa? What's, you know?
Yeah.
What's a hagas? What's a 911? Tell me all the deets. So just go in like with authenticity. Tell them the things that you truly believe, right or wrong, about the club's performance, and then just build.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good one. Here is a question that I couldn't even begin to come up with an answer for myself, but if Boston came back to the NWSL but wasn't called the Breakers, what would you name them? And I, like, the chicken question was very stressful. This one literally broke my brain in such a profound way. I was like, I don't even know where to begin.
Right. I think there's kind of a general consensus, at least among us, so consensus of two,
yes,
that the name Breakers has too much baggage now.
Yeah.
And there's too many vibes around it or whatever. It'd be better to start fresh, particularly if there's a new ownership group. Although, I would be tickled if they were like, why don't we do an homage and call them the Boston Armada? But I don't think people should be making giant multi-million brand decisions based on wanting to honor one small-time supporters group.
Yeah.
That was around for a few years in NWSL. Although, I mean, I think that's a strong name.
I think that it is. What's also interesting is trying to maybe potentially put it in conversation the way that the Revs don't pretend to be, but like, you know, that they are the New England Revolution. And is there potentially opening yourself up to more supporters if you are not necessarily tied to one specific city, especially with like how people do come in from like New Hampshire, Southern Vermont, Maine, you know, like there is a way to still be a part of that community, right? Mm-hmm. Without necessarily being like Boston, especially because like, would they even be playing in Boston? Probably not. You know, like that's, right. I think it's, you know, looking at what Gotham did, right? In terms of like trying to straddle that line of multiple places, mm-hmm. is there a way that if the Boston area market, whether that's actual Boston, Providence, whatever, potentially Connecticut. Connecticut has been in the discussion for a while. Like, what do you actually use as a reference point?
Right. Gotham is a good example of, like, invoking the feeling around a geographical area, if you're familiar with Gotham. I was kind of shocked that more people didn't know that Gotham is, like, a historical name for New York, and it's not something that DC Comics invented.
Yeah.
I was like, truly, the public education system has failed so many of us. But I think that's a good point, as long as it's not called, like, Boston FC or, like, New England Soccer Club or something. Be a little more inventive than that.
Yeah. Although I have made my stand for, I do support the use of SC in this country, but you have to have an actual name. Like, it, I'm not a big fan of the, like, place plus FC or SC. Like, it has to have a name attached. I think, like, you could also maybe potentially play with, like, the theme of, like, the Atlantic Ocean or the coast, right? Like, there is a way to potentially play with something along those lines. And that would also kind of be in the theme of the Breakers, right? Like, that has always been a kind of ocean inspired thing. So I think if we're looking for things, maybe we could go in that direction. But it is, I the stress of naming things, as we have seen in this space.
Right. I'm trying to think of, like, similar to Gotham, are there any phrases or words that are historically associated with Boston that would make good teams? And I think the only thing I can think of is, like, City on a Hill.
Yeah.
Which is reference to, what's his
name? Like, the sermon.
Yeah. Like, and I was like, okay, maybe not.
Yeah, not that one. Not that one.
Like, Hill City SC.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It, yeah.
It, I probably wouldn't go in that historical direction.
No,
but,
no.
Yeah.
I don't know. Fishing fleet.
I mean, the fleet could potentially be.
Yeah.
That's not a, I mean, it's kind of in that same theme as the Armada, but.
Right. But more of an homage to, like, the working class
historical
industry.
Go full on, like, fishing. Yeah. Like, I grew up in a fishing town. Our church was Our Lady of Good Voyage. I feel like that could potentially be, you know.
Yeah.
There's some stuff to mine there.
Our Lady of Good Voyage is a great name for a supporters group, quite frankly.
That is very true.
Especially if you have a nautical-themed club, Our Lady of Good Voyage supporters. The aesthetic.
It would make some great t-shirts.
Okay.
Now we're just actually, this conversation is turning into us creating our own fake club that does not actually play soccer, in the vein of, like, Asbury Park FC / Salt.
Yeah.
We potentially could have.
I'll think about it, because I'll be honest with you, it is something that I actually do think about from time to time. I'll just be in the kitchen and it'll hit me, like, out of nowhere. I'll be like, names for a Boston football club. But
yeah. All right. Let's think of one. I think let's end here, just because this has been kind of the big topic of the week after Naomi Osaka. But there was a really good question about our take on balancing journalist access, asking tough questions, player athlete, mental health. I think this is something that we've all been discussing. Also, pros/cons of Zoom pressers, which I think could probably be its own 40-minute podcast of the pros and cons of Zoom. But it is, I mean, I think the conversation has already kind of turned not necessarily super productive. Like, I was reading an article this morning from a dude who was just basically like, let me pretend to be a shrink for Naomi Osaka and why she shouldn't be playing tennis if she can't handle media. And I was just like, well, this has gone in a direction that everyone should have seen coming and is already terrible.
Yeah. There's a lot of bad faith engagement with what she's asking for, when I think it boils down to, like, this is an additional caveat that tennis is not like soccer.
Yeah.
The media presence in tennis, I think, is pretty different to the one in women's soccer in the United States anyway. But, like, she's been in some really toxic atmospheres throughout her career, combined with, you know, increased levels of misogynoir in tennis. Like, look at the way the Williams sisters are treated, Coco Gauff and now Naomi. So there's a lot more bad faith actors out there. And, you know, it has taken a toll on her. So what she's asking for is, like, some human consideration and for some sense of like moderation and the press corps like sharpening up and, you know, just calling out how they've kind of sucked. There are great tennis reporters out there.
Yeah.
I follow some of them. They're great tennis reporters out there. But inevitably, there are also really sucky ones who ask really demeaning, misogynist, or even just clueless questions that show they're not really engaging with the material. They're just like, talk about how you felt.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, like, we've definitely seen that in women's soccer, too, of, like, someone getting assigned to something, right? Or, like, I think about the questions that if you're in a mixed zone for U.S. national team, right? Like, I was going to so many games in the lead up to 2019 and going to different cities where you have different media who are just getting tossed into this without necessarily knowing anything. And it would be the same questions for the same players in every single market. And it's just like, I can see how that is not a pleasant experience by any stretch of the imagination. So
in women's soccer, it's also different because there's a whole team.
Yeah.
And even if there's, you know, two, maybe even, God forbid, three games in a week, you'll usually be rotated. I think also the process that happens in NWSL is where we generally request two players after the game. And I think teams sometimes have declined or just been like the player declined to do press and it's been fine.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of been the unspoken equation so far. At least as my experience being like, look, we can ask players questions in press conferences, but if they don't want to answer, that's their prerogative and like, don't be salty about it.
Yeah.
Because they're a human being who just came out of doing a really tough job for 90 minutes.
Yeah. And I mean, when we like, this is also, I think one of the things that we're talking about from a media association point of view too, is also like going from all remote access to how do you start the hybrid process of people are going to be traveling again, right? Like, will there be in-person access for a while? Will it go fully back to all in-person? Is there still some value to being able to remotely access like post-game Zooms, right? Like, how do you balance all of these different interests now? Because the Zoom world has also opened up coverage to a lot of people who like can't travel or don't have a team in their local market and want to do, like, there are absolutely pros to this. There are also cons because Zooms, like, especially in this kind of big world, like, a lot of people in this space, again, like, we're now both full-time writers, right? But, like, other people have other roles that or jobs. So are they able to be up until 1 a.m. on a game on the West Coast, right? Like, trying to get a question in on Zoom. Like, not everyone can do that. So, again, it is kind of trying to work through, like, what is going to both ensure access, get better stories, because I think fundamentally stories only get better when players and people are talking face to face, right? And not necessarily like staring across, because in some of these Zooms also the players can't even see us. We're just like a voice coming out of nowhere, right? Like, right. So to understand that there are two people just actually trying to have a conversation and tell a story, like, that sort of part of it too. Like, I don't think anybody wants to take away access, because I think press conferences can be an important part of it, but also for me, like, they are not a fundamental part of my job. I don't know if that necessarily means I think that they should go away, because they do have their own value. But in terms of where I find like the best communication happens is not necessarily in a press conference, and it is almost certainly not in a press conference that happens via Zoom, but every once in a while you get something that actually breaks through.
I think particular to soccer, because once again, different vibe and history from tennis press, is that the press conference, particularly by Zoom, does have a democratizing effect. It's allowed more access, particularly from smaller outlets, people who can't afford to travel, can't travel, you know, who might have to be writing their stories entirely off of this, or they're new in the space and the press conference is actually the easiest place with the lowest barrier to entry for them to get in and be treated as an accredited writer. So I do think that has value as like an entry point for people who want to cover the game. And that's where you build trust. And then you can start to, you know, talk to team comms and be like, I've been in the past three press conferences. I've asked questions in good faith. You see, I'm not a creep here who's trying to get, you know, a gossip story out of a player. Can I have a one-on-one with so-and-so? Mm-hmm. You know? So I think they have a lot of value there in helping to build the press pool, assuming that you're coming to the press pool and acting in good faith.
Yeah.
Which was part of the problem with Naomi Osaka and dealing with the tennis press.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's also a difference between asking a tough question that encourages a player to consider their own performance versus like, why are you terrible on clay? Which I right. also feel like is happening at times. So, right.
I mean, yeah. we could have another full podcast on like how to frame questions to players.
Yeah.
To not put them immediately like in a negative or defensive mindset. And we would call it like healthy, nonviolent communication.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, I think Sophie Lawson had a good article that went up today about positivity in the space, right? Like there is a need for more critical coverage and all, like, but I think that there's also a line of understanding that players are humans who their performance affects them deeply. And
right.
that's like those things can coexist.
Right. Like you talk about Bethany Balser's article where she talked about she's having a really hard time with mental health right now because as a pro athlete, she ties her performance to her self-worth. And I think that's true of a lot of pro athletes, not just in women's soccer. So naturally, when you're questioning your own performance, for a lot of them, it turns into a question of their self-worth. And I think there's a way for us as media to be aware of that, and but also to be able to have the space to ask players like factual, but maybe difficult questions about games and performance.
Yeah. Yeah. Either way, I don't know if we're we're solving this problem on this podcast, but I do think, you know, it's something that everyone is actively trying to think about and is trying to think about, like, you know, even if it is just, do we start talking to players about like what media access is like for them? Like, should we be having those conversations? Is there a way to build, like, again, we talk so much about like women's soccer doesn't have to like follow in the footprint of other sports. Like, is there a way for us to rethink the way that a lot of this stuff works and make it better for both sides?
Right. I've written about this a little bit. I wrote an article for Fair, where it's like, is there room for this sport to grow in a holistic way where we take into account the total value of a human being as a human being and not just as a machine that outputs soccer?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Big question. Discussion will, I'm sure, still happen. But all right, let's end it there since we are coming up on an hour. But now that you are here, I'm sure you will be back on the show a number of times. There is no escaping. Oh. Welcome to The Athletic. All right. As I tweeted, as I keep saying here, Steph works with me now. There's no escaping anymore. But still, we do appreciate her time all the same. And hopefully for all of you who said that she should be on the show more in that listener survey from a few months back, hopefully this is living up to the expectations. All right, one more thing. Between the last episode and this episode this week, my wife and I managed to watch all of Mayor of Easttown, and we did actually manage to get it all in, and so we had to wait for a couple of days for the finale. But seriously, if you have access to HBO Max, and if you haven't watched it yet, I personally just enjoyed it very much, and I will also say that now I'm rewatching Fargo Season 2 because I love Jean Smart that much. So the time for theories might be done for Mare, but it is good TV. It trusts its audience. And in my opinion, it absolutely stuck the landing. All right. As always, the home for the show is at fulltimepod.com. You can find links to all of the major podcast platforms. If you're enjoying the show, again, your reminder, the ratings and reviews absolutely make a difference, especially on Apple. One more call. You can subscribe to The Athletic right now at theathletic.com/fulltime. My name is Meg Linehan. I was joined by Steph Young. We are both full-time women's soccer writers at The Athletic. You've been listening to Full Time with Meg Linehan. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at It's Meg Linehan and all of my work at The Athletic. Full Time does not exist without the work and support of senior podcast producer Michael Zimmerman. I'm Meg Linehan, and thank you for listening.